You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind?
Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday. It is the 9th of November in the year 2004. And we are going to continue this evening where we left off last evening. Our spiritual message tonight, from the Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. Father, search me and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Last night, I mentioned to you, before we get started, we were talking about the attack going on in Iraq on Fallujah. But before that, I had mentioned the possibility that this election isn't really over. And I want you to be aware of the possibility, because, as I said, we were watching it, and I believe he was the Secretary of State of Ohio that was explaining the provisional votes and that it was going to take them 11 days to count them. And 11 days from Election Day would be Saturday, the 13th. But here's an update for, because Ohio was the swing state, folks. Isn't that interesting? It was so close that one state, once again, was making the difference in the outcome of the election. And they have, of course, called it for George Bush, and Kerry did his concession speech. And I understand that George Bush did an acceptance speech, but we have no idea what kind of a fun they might have in throwing this country into a tizzy again and giving us an announcement that now that all the votes are in, oh my, we made a mistake. It isn't George W. Bush, it's John Kerry. Remembering that the two of them are like two peas in a pod. Nothing's going to be different except the names and the faces. This is an update from Dan Travis, Ohio Democratic Party Communications Director, Tuesday, the 9th of November, 2004. This was posted today on the Truth Out News, whatever it's called. The Ohio Democratic Party shares Senator John Kerry's insistence that every vote be counted. Here's where we stand in Ohio. After the unofficial results reported November 2nd, George Bush leads John Kerry by 136,483 votes. Sound familiar, folks? Provisional ballots will be counted. 155,000 provisional ballots have been cast and not yet counted. Now, there's 155,000 provisional ballots out that have been cast and not yet counted, and as it stands right now, George Bush leads John Kerry by only 136,483 votes, folks. County boards of elections have until Friday to verify the eligibility of those who cast a provisional vote. That would be this Friday. counting will begin Saturday, November 13th. County boards, oh my, have until December 1st, 2004 to certify their vote totals and report them to the Secretary of State. Two Democrats and two Republicans sit on each county board of elections. Tabulations of the votes will be done in a bipartisan manner. Only if there is a tie vote on the board does the decision go to the Secretary of State. Wow. Overseas, absentee ballots have not been counted in Ohio yet. Overseas absentee ballots by civilians may have been received by County Board of Elections by November 2nd that have not yet been counted. The Board of Elections will count those votes. Overseas absentee ballots by military have until Friday, November 12th, to arrive and be counted by the Boards of Election in the free final total. 93,000 punch cards were cast, but a vote for president was not counted. The votes were not counted either because the voter voted for more than one candidate or did not vote for a presidential candidate. These ballots will be reexamined if there is a recount. Ohio has a uniform statewide system for recounting punch card ballots. Hanging chads and dimple chads are treated uniformly throughout the state. Examination, didn't they have pregnant chads too, folks? Pregnant chads? I guess those are the dimpled ones. Examination for errors going on in all 88 Ohio counties. A vote error, listen to this, a vote error on election night gave George Bush 3,893 more votes in a Franklin County precinct than actually cast for him. That error was found by comparing the unofficial abstract of votes cast by precinct to votes for each candidate. Well, let me do that again. That error was found by comparing the unofficial abstract of votes cast by precinct to votes for each candidate. Officials in all 88 counties have been contacted and requested to review for a similar error. No Ohio county used Diebold electronic voting machines. Ohio did not use modern electronic voting machines in this election. Six counties use an older form of electronic voting, which has a means of verifying the accuracy of the vote. In 69 Ohio counties, punch card ballots were used. In Ohio, a recount is automatic for statewide election if difference in the vote is within 0.25% of the total votes cast. For a recount in the presidential race, this is probably about a 19,000 vote margin. About 19,000 vote margin between Kerry and Bush, folks, could call for a recount in Ohio, the swing state. Only a losing candidate can request a recount. A recount may always be requested regardless of the closeness of the race. The recount is requested by the losing candidate. The request for a recount must be made within 5 days of the official announcement of the results by the Secretary of State. The fee for a recount is set by each Board of Elections, may be between $5 and $10 per precinct. You can limit the recount to specific precincts. The cost is deposited by the person making the recount request at the time of application based on the number of precincts requested to be recounted. The entire recount and contest procedures are outlined at ORC 3515. Information about fraud or mistake can be reported to the Ohio Democratic Party. You can leave a message, here's a number if any of you living in Ohio want to get a hold of these people, 614-221-6563. 614-221-6563, extension 134. This information will be shared with our legal counsel as the official election tabulations are being made. And that's the end of that. So, a lot of votes out there yet, aren't there, folks? All right. Last night, if you're listening on the shortwave, I understand that there was probably little or no reception for any of our shortwave listeners. And if you are listening tonight, I tuned it in before I began the broadcast, and I could hear there was background noise, but I could hear the broadcaster on before Sweet Liberty, and I could make out what he was saying. So I decided to continue from where we started last night. And folks, what I'm going to do, possibly, because it wasn't really great, we may be repeating these broadcasts. I think they're important enough. The information, especially last night, that I so want our shortwave listeners to be able to hear. Now, what I started when we were running. All right. What I'm having problems again with this. Seems like a short, but it doesn't make any sense because it happens when I'm not moving a muscle. And maybe you're not hearing what I'm hearing. Could be a short in my headset, but it gets all fuzzy in my headset. And I don't know what it's sounding like to you folks, but it's a little bit disturbing. And I'm just going to I'm going to try to continue here. There we are. That sounds a little bit... Oh, that's better. I don't know if it sounds any different to you at all. And all I did was turn the volume down and turn it back up again, and it cleared up. Last night I had begun to share an article with you that was written by Senator Tom Harkin regarding the draft. We spent about a week talking about the draft and how important it is. If your children have not registered, don't let them register, folks. Please don't let them register. Many states, I believe, it was reported that 34 states today have implemented a draft registration when you go for your driver's license. Now, I don't know if this is a first-time driver or if anybody within draft age, if it applies to them, but please do not let your young son or daughter register for the draft. President, this is by Senator Tom Harkin, why Bush will restart the draft if reelected. A major terrorist, it doesn't mean that that if they decide on Kerry, remember this, folks, it doesn't mean if they decide that Kerry was the winner and Kerry is the president, that there won't be a draft reinstituted. And I believe that Kerry had made the comment in one of the debates that there would not be a recall or a reinstitution of the draft unless there was a national emergency. Now, you know, that strikes us back, my memory back, to reading about the speech that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, made over and over and over again to the American people that during his reelection campaign, that your sons are not going to be fighting a war overseas and there will be no draft. I don't know. He said that they will not be fighting in the war that was going on in Europe. And then they changed his speech. And they added this one little phrase, unless we are attacked. Unless we are attacked. And, of course, then there was Pearl Harbor. And so Kerry has said that there will not be a draft unless there is a national emergency. They decide what a national emergency is, don't they? They decide. So Senator Tom Harkin says a major terrorist attack could easily serve as the pretext for setting the draft in motion. President George Bush President George W. Bush may or may not have a secret plan to reinstate the draft, but this is besides the point. The deteriorating facts on the ground in Iraq, plus the Bush doctrine of acting preemptively and unilaterally against hostile regimes, will soon leave him no choice. If Bush is reelected, he will have to restart the draft. Well, this is BS too, isn't it? acting preemptively and unilaterally against hostile regimes? I don't think so. What was hostile about Iraq, folks? Nothing. Iraq was no danger to this country. There were never any threats against this country. But he's being politically correct here, I guess, huh? He said, indeed, Bush has already imposed stage one of a new draft. Many soldiers whose enlistment period is up are not being allowed to leave the service. And those who left the service years ago are being forced to put on the uniform again against their wills. It is clear that we already have a backdoor draft. Bush has effectively ended the all-volunteer military. And stage two of a reinstated draft would be easy to implement. Draft boards are already in place in every county in the United States. They're also in the schools, folks. They're talking young boys into, and girls probably, into signing up to registering. I guess girls aren't registering yet, are they? Young men who turn 18 are already required to register with their local draft board. No, they're not. They are not required to register with their local draft board. If they do not register, they are not going to get government money. They won't get a college grant fund. They won't be able to go to the government, Big Brother government, and get any money. And there is no money in the world that is more important than the life and the souls of these young people. Do you agree with me on that, ladies and gentlemen? Because their souls are so stained when they do the kinds of atrocities, when they commit the kinds of atrocities that are being committed in foreign countries today by young soldiers who are just following instructions. Senator Harkins goes on to say a major terrorist attack could easily serve as the pretext for flipping the switch and setting this apparatus in motion. It is obvious that our armed forces are stretched dangerously thin. We do not have enough people in uniform to meet current needs in Iraq and Afghanistan, much less to deal with a confrontation with Iran or North Korea. Right now, total active Army and Marine personnel number approximately 655,000. Now, this is coming from Senator Tom Harkin. I don't know if his figures are correct, folks. But right now, he says, total active Army and Marine personnel number approximately 655,000, and that includes support units, training units, headquarters personnel, and others who do not see combat. In a long, drawn-out war, such as Vietnam or Iraq, units sent to the front lines have to be rotated out periodically and replaced by an equal number of forces. Well, I want to remind you of the newspaper article that I shared with you that said that they were sending troops back into action who had been hospitalized, who were not well or were not healed, either from illness or from wounds. They're sending them back into action. Harkin goes on, Senator Tom Harkin goes on here. Currently, we have 135,000 troops in Iraq, 20,000 in Afghanistan, approximately 100,000 in Asia, and more than 100,000 in Europe. Our armed forces have been strained to the breaking point to fill the gaps and shortages. Tens of thousands of National Guard and reservists have been called up, some for several years at a time. But there is a cost to all of this. Morale is suffering, as evidenced by the recent refusal of an Army Reserve platoon to carry out an order. Enlistments and reenlistments are down. The Army National Guard fell 10% short of its 2004 recruiting goal. The regular Army has had to ease up on standards to meet its recruiting goals. What if all out civil war breaks out in Iraq? I'm sorry about that. What if all out civil war breaks out in Iraq and we have to increase our troop strength to 200 or 300,000 to quell it? We have to do that? What if newly reelected Bush decides to act preemptively against Iran, Syria, or North Korea? Today, you do remember, folks, that Iran and Syria are part of the Greater Israel, the biblical mandate of Jehovah's chosen and peculiar special people of the land that was allegedly given or promised to them. It has nothing to do with Israel itself. The biblical borders stretch from shore to shore. Iraq is part of it. Iran, Syria, there are others. Harkin goes on, today people are hesitant to join the National Guard or reserves because of skyrocketing odds of being sent into combat or kept away from family and jobs for a year or longer. Morale, enlistments, and reenlistments are falling at the same time that military manpower needs are rising dramatically. So where would a reelected Bush get the manpower to pacify Iraq while pursuing the next phases of his doctrine of preemptive unilateral war? There is only one viable option, a reinstated draft. It is probably too much to expect Bush to acknowledge this before Election Day, but we would do well to remember when President Lyndon B. Johnson was running for election in 1964. Voters were afraid. He had a secret plan to escalate the war in Vietnam. He denied it, repeatedly promising, "I will not send American boys halfway around the world to do a job that Asian boys ought to be doing for themselves." Want to hear that promise again from Lyndon Baines Johnson? "I will not send American boys halfway around the world to do a job that Asian boys ought to be doing for themselves." Johnson was reelected, and sure enough, millions of U.S. boys were drafted and sent halfway around the world to Vietnam. More than 17,000 of those draftees got killed in combat. What kind of BS is this? 17,000 of those draftees got killed? We have no idea of the actual numbers, do we, folks? And you can bet it was a heck of a lot more than 17,000. They're reporting 10,000 U.S. soldiers today so far have died, and many thousands have been very seriously wounded. That's a lie. I cannot prove what I'm saying right now. I assert that's a lie. So Americans today, we have good reasons to fear the return of the draft. Bush might have avoided the draft when he was a young man, but if reelected, he will not be able to avoid the draft as president. And it says here that Tom Harkin is a Democratic senator from Iowa. Well, I just wanted you to hear that coming from one of the, not insiders, but somebody who who's really sticking his neck out saying things like that. All right. Now, last night I read to you a few headlines. The attack on Fallujah. All sides prepare for an attack on Fallujah. They've started it, folks. Americans step up attacks against Fallujah. Close roads as showdown with insurgents looms. And here's one. Okay. First, I'm going to reread to you the war prayer. By Mark Twain. I read this at the starting of this war, or before the war actually started. This is by Mark Twain. It's titled The War Prayer. Listen very closely, folks. It was a time of great and exalting. It was a time of great and exalting excitement. The country was up in arms. The war was on. In every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating. The bands were playing. The toy pistols popping. The bunched firecrackers hissing and spluttering. On every hand and far down the receding and fading spread of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily, the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue, gay and fine, in their new uniforms. The proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly, the packed mass meetings listened, panting, to patriot oratory, which stirred the deepest deeps of their hearts, the deepest depths of their hearts, and which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause, the tears of emotion running down their cheeks the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to flag and country and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause in outpourings of fervid eloquence which moved every listener. It was indeed a glad and gracious time, and a half dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straightaway got such a stern and angry warning that, for their personal safety's sake, they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way. Sunday morning came. Next day, the battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their young faces alight with martial dreams, visions of the stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender. And then, home from the war, bronzed heroes, welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory. Folks, we're going to take a break right here, and we are going to pick this up after. And please get your pen in your hand, if you would like to see this broadcast continue. As I said last night, it appears that we're going to have to fold it up. And there were just a few things that I wanted to do before. And the reason is because we are $9,000 behind in our airtime bill. $9,000. And there just aren't enough of you, evidently, who are listening, who believe that it's worthwhile keeping it on the air. But if you want to help, because it is, after all, It is my debt. If you want to help, please take my address down.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
I'll give you that, I'll give you that address once again in case you didn't get it, folks. It is Jackie Petrou, P-A-T-R-U. P.O. Box, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. And I was reading to you the War Prayer that was written by Mark Twain, and if I believe you can relate to this, to what is happening today. And, as we were finishing just before the break, this Sunday morning, the volunteers were there. The battalions would leave for the front the next day. The church was filled. The volunteers were there. Their young faces were alight with martial dreams, visions of the stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender, and then, home from the war, bronzed heroes, welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory, in your imagination. Yeah, folks. With the volunteers sat their dear ones, proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag, or failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded, a war chapter from the Old Testament, was read. The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building, and with one impulse the house rose with glowing eyes and beating hearts and poured out that tremendous invocation: God, the all-terrible, thou who ordainest, thunder thy clarion and lightning thy sword. God, the all-terrible. Then came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passionate pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benign Father of us all, the burden of the prayer's supplication was that an ever-merciful and benign Father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work. Bless them, shield them in the day of battle and the hour of peril. Bear them in his mighty hand. Make them strong and confident, invincible in the bloody onset. Help them to crush the foe. Grant to them and to their flag and their country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless steps up the main aisle, his eyes fixed upon the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet. His head was bare. His white hair descended in a frothy cataract to his shoulders. His seamy face, unnaturally pale. Hello?
Jackie?
Yes.
This is June in Illinois. We're getting nothing but static.
Well, June, honey, we're going to be repeating these broadcasts. I'm so sorry about this, but I'm doing it live tonight so that we can have the tapes of the broadcast to tape when the reception clears up.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, brother's fair turned out great. Now, you come on in the next program and nothing.
Yeah, well, listen after Sweet Liberty is over, June. And call me. Do you have my home phone number, honey?
Hold up. I got the one I'm giving you. Wait a minute.
All right. It's all the same, except instead of 3025, it's 3035, June.
Okay, will do. I'll give you a call.
Thank you, sweetheart. Bye-bye. Darn it. That's all right, folks. You'll hear this. You'll get it. Let me complete this. I don't want to break into this again, okay, just for a minute. Although I do know with our shortwave listeners, there is about a minute and 10-second delay from the Internet. The aged stranger entered, and he was wearing a long robe, long white hair, and it said his seamy face was unnaturally pale, pale even to ghastliness. With all eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way without pausing. Hello?
Jackie, this is Hank.
Hi, Hank.
You're not legible in Chicago at all, dear.
Well, we're going to redo this. We're going to replay this broadcast, Hank. And last night's also, okay, honey?
It's not legible at all.
Okay.
I don't know what they're doing.
Well, I don't either, but...
And I dialed... I tried three different receivers here, including my big ham radio. And... you know, and I can pick out a whisper with my ham radio, you know. And so it could be solar flares could be causing it. I don't know. But
well,
the signal isn't there, sweetheart.
I just got a call from June in Illinois.
Yeah.
And she's getting nothing but static. And I asked her, and you might do the same thing, listen to the broadcast that follows mine, because she said Brother Stair came in loud and clear.
Yeah, well, I'll be listening, you know.
And give me a call after the broadcast.
I'll leave one of them, and if he comes through clear, I'll call you back. If he doesn't, I won't call you.
Okay, thank you, Hank. Bye-bye,
okay.
Honey.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care, dear.
Thank you, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, I'm so sorry about this, but it's okay because we are going to replay these broadcasts. So anyway, the man walked up. All the eyes in the church were following him and wondering. He made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side, and he stood there waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued with his moving prayer, and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal, "Bless our arms. Grant us the victory, O Lord and God, Father and protector of our land and our flag." The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to set aside, which the startled minister did, and took his place. The man took his place. During some moments, he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes, in which burned an uncanny light. And then in a deep voice he said, "I come from the throne, with a capital T, bearing a message from Almighty God. I come from the throne bearing a message from Almighty God." The words smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. "He has heard the prayer," this is in quotes now, this is the stranger speaking to the people in church, "he has heard the prayer of his servant your shepherd, and will grant it, if such shall be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import. That is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men, in that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. God's servant and yours has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No, it is two. One uttered, the other not. Both have reached the ear of him who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this. Keep it in mind. If you would beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware, lest without intent you invoke a curse upon a neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain upon your crop, which needs it, by that act, you are possibly praying for a curse upon some neighbor's crop which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your servant's prayer, the uttered part of it. I am commissioned of God to put into words the other part of that prayer, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly and unthinkingly. God, grant that it was so. You heard these words, grant us the victory, O Lord our God. That is sufficient. The whole of the unuttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words, grant us the victory, O Lord God. Elaborations were not necessary. When you prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory, which must follow it, cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening Spirit of God fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commanded me to put it into words. Listen. O Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle. Be thou near them. With them in spirit, we also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved fireside to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale form of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows fraught with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless. Help us to turn them out roofless with little children to wander unfriended the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst, sports of the sun flames of summer and the icy winds of winter, broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it for our sakes. Who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimages, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in spirit of love, of him who is the source of love, and who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset, and seek his aid with humbled and contrite heart. Amen. After a pause, he said, ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits. It was afterward believed that the man was a lunatic because there was no sense in what he said. That's the end of the war prayer. Now I want you to hear something that a woman named Kirsten Anderberg wrote, and I think we have time to finish this tonight. Mothers and children, run and hide. America is coming to town. Imagine walking down the street in your town and finding yourself, this is about Fallujah, because they blanketed the town, folks, before they were going to attack, telling the women and children to get out. If you're not an insurgent, leave, because we're coming in there to kill. She said, imagine walking down the street in your town and finding yourself in a hailstorm of pamphlets from another country, being dropped on you from an airplane above, telling the women and children to leave town. Now, as war is impending, and they will be in harm's way. I can only imagine such a scene, as I have never lived in a war zone. I am from the country doing a lot of killing abroad. But my own personal safety, as well as that of my fellow Americans, has never been directly threatened by an occupying country within my country's borders in my lifetime. So when I hear news reports that Americans have dropped pamphlets telling women and children to leave Fallujah, I can only imagine the scene. As a mother, I imagine that scene in the context of the stories that I've read about what Vietnamese villagers went through when Americans did door-to-door searches in the Vietnam War, and how the villagers waited in the forests around their towns until the U.S. military had done the damage they were set on doing. Then the villagers would return to try to rebuild the mess left. An unsettled fear forever permeated the village thereafter. And indeed, intimidation is part of the American war tactics arsenal. Often the villagers could even watch the pillaging of their town from perches afar. And I have read accounts of Vietnam vets, accounts of remorse and regret for what they participated in while burning villages, innocent people's homes, and conducting brutal door-to-door occupations. I also saw a lot of pain and suffering when America invaded Afghanistan and refugee camps became swollen with hungry, sick, and cold women, children, and the elderly. Refugee camps full of the exact people America is telling to flee Fallujah right now by pamphlet drop. I can imagine walking down my street and picking up one of those flyers. Can you put yourself in that place, folks? In your own hometown right now, imagine yourself walking down your street and picking up one of those flyers and reading that women and children need to flee the town. In my real situation, as a single mother with no family and coming from poverty with no car or savings, I can only imagine rushing home to pack our belongings in a panic. I suppose you would need to put on your best walking shoes, if you had any, and your warmest coats. Candles and matches seem like they would be good, but maybe that would be a luxury. Socks would be nice if you had any. Something to carry water in. Food that could be transported. Utensils for eating and cooking. Any medicinal compounds and supplies. Necessary tools. Scissors, knives, needles, thread, rope, a comb and toothbrush. Papers, such as birth certificates and passports. Phone numbers and addresses of people in other places that maybe could help me. Herb and plant identification booklets. Pen, paper, plastic sheets, tarps, anything waterproof. Clothing, any maps I had of the region. One toy for a child, perhaps, if there was room. And the heaviest all of all, bedding. All of this I would need to be able to carry on my back for many miles and many days while being responsible for a child in tow as well. I feel there is great pain and suffering among the residents of Fallujah right now. Yes?
Yeah, Jackie?
Yeah.
This is Steve from Illinois. Listen, the reason that you're not getting through on shortwave is because the Aurora Borealis has really got the picked up, and shortwave is out. 6-meter and 2-meter VHF is open on the handbands, but shortwave is completely blank. It's because of the Aurora Borealis.
Thanks, Steve. Well, we're going to replay these broadcasts when it gets better, honey.
Well, I listen to you on a computer base.
Oh, good.
But it is because of, it's not because of anybody jamming or anything.
Oh, I didn't think so. I didn't think so, really.
Yeah, it is because of the Aurora, because of all the atmospheric conditions.
Thanks.
It's just got shortwave completely knocked out everywhere.
Okay, thanks.
It's been that way for about the last 3 or 4 nights.
Okay.
And during the day, it's been real bad, too.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Okay, you have a good one.
Thanks. Bye-bye, honey. All right, folks. So this is a mother, from a mother's point of view. If she had gotten a pamphlet that was dropped out of an airplane because a foreign army is ready to attack her town, and she has to flee, and she's talking here about the things that she would try to pack up, but she has to carry it all on her back because she doesn't have a car or transportation. And she said, I feel that there is great pain and suffering among the residents of Fallujah right now. Mothers are going through packing their things, just as I have described, to make way for the Americans. The way the mainstream news is talking about the invasion of Fallujah is as if it is a town full of toys or robots, like in the Toy Story, that could just be wound up and pointed in a new direction, and there they'll go, leaving all their possessions, buildings, and town behind to be destroyed. I cannot believe the cold manner in which the American news announcers on TV tell us that the U.S. military is dropping flyers on Fallujah, telling the women and children to leave. Can you imagine if such a thing happened in your town? I can, and I'm not liking what I'm feeling. I can feel those mothers frantically trying to pack their belongings now, wondering what will happen to them, wondering if they'll come home to burned houses and bombed buildings and infrastructure. I feel this because I have read the memoirs of Vietnam vets who will never forget what they saw and what they were ordered to do in that war, who forever are haunted by feelings of inhumanity after burning Vietnamese villages, as the villagers sat terrified in the woods nearby, watching and waiting for the, quote, liberators to leave so they could go try to rebuild their villages and lives. I recently read a book about the Vietnamese War that had a section on door-to-door searches and village invasions. The brutality involved in door-to-door searches is inherent and frightening. Often, the invading military personnel don't speak the language of the people whose homes that they're invading and pillaging. The invading soldiers are often unfamiliar and disrespectful of cultural differences as well. And also there's a frantic panic from the soldiers' adrenaline, and there's guilt. And if we're going to keep troops there against their will after they were to be released for their tour of duty, who will they take their anger out on? The people who live in the country they're invading, of course. And when one's buddy is killed in action while he is on extended tour duty in the Vietnamese War or in this Iraq War, it is often the tendency of the soldiers to want to take revenge on all Vietnamese or all Iraqis due to racism because of the death of their buddy. Indeed, some American soldiers and many American citizens seem to think that any Iraqis deserve to die for what they did to America on 9/11, even though the connection between Iraq and 9/11 has yet to be proven. I have heard Americans say over and over that we should just, quote, nuke them, meaning all of Iraq. I remember these same people saying the same thing about Iran in the 1970s. When American soldiers invade a city or town, there's a frantic panic from villagers who cannot understand what the soldiers want or why they're destroying their villages. Additionally, American soldiers traditionally don't know how to differentiate the enemy, quote, enemy guerrillas from everyday citizens in the foreign countries that they invade. So basically, they just shoot anyone who runs. On the Jim Lehrer News Hour, November 5th, 2004, I was saddened to hear this exact subject broached by several military officials. When Mr. Lehrer asked these military officials how the troops would be able to differentiate who's an enemy combatant and who's an ordinary citizen when invading Fallujah, the answer from the officers seemed to be that everyone who is not an enemy combatant will have fled the city by then due to American military warnings. Thus, we don't need to care about that. I heard someone talking on a news show not long ago about the idea of shooting whoever runs, like we did in the Vietnam War. So it only adds more chaos to the villagers' trauma when they cannot understand the language of the occupying troops at their doors, while officers shoot their neighbors dead in front of their eyes if they try to run. I see the same ideas we used in the Vietnam War in play now in Iraq. General Westmoreland said during Vietnamese that the more Viet Cong dead, the better, basically. And in the Vietnam War, U.S. soldiers could not tell ordinary Vietnamese citizens from, quote, the enemy, mirroring our experiences in the Middle East right now. So they shot farmers as well as guerrilla fighters. This caused an outcry, so the military told soldiers only to shoot Vietnamese people if they were running. When that system failed, the policy often became, well, if they were dead in Vietnamese, they were just considered Viet Cong, or the enemy. That is what I expect to see in Fallujah. If we shot them dead, and they're Iraqi and in Fallujah, they were enemy. Period. Or as the military officials on the Jim Lehrer News Hour intimated, if they stayed in Fallujah, they must have been enemy fighters, because we told everyone else to leave. The thing I didn't see American military officials explain was where all those sick, elderly, and parenting citizens of Fallujah were supposed to go. Did we bring in large transport vehicles and moving vans to help them? Of course not. So we're just telling the poorest sector in town to disappear. And if they don't leave and they're killed, these women, children, and elderly, will probably just be tallied as part of the enemy militia in death, just like Vietnam. We have to go, folks. We'll see you tomorrow night. Thank you for tuning in. God bless you. Good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are the